What's wrong? Billy says when she sees me hesitate. I'm not sure how she's going to react, but I tell her anyway. None of this would be possible if not for one person, Gilly, and I think it only right that she be here when I use this. She sighs. Gotta make sure your boss is here, huh? Gilly. No, it's fine, she says. I understand. Call her. I don't care. Her last words leave a sour feeling in my stomach. She cuts her eyes and looks away, but she doesn't storm off or anything. I decide not to push it any further. I send a PM to Val Helena. Me. Hey, Val, I'm level 12 and I'm about to use the scroll. Would mean a lot if you were here to witness it. Her reply comes a few seconds later. Val Helena. BRT. A few minutes pass with neither Gilly nor I saying much of anything to each other. She doesn't look mad or anything, but I can definitely sense that a rift has formed between us. I'm still confused as to why, though. I explained everything Val Helena did for me, and still she holds this weird grudge. Maybe it's a female rivalry thing that I'll just never understand. Val Helena finally arrives, in her paladin outfit this time. But she's not alone. She's brought the entire guild with her. I have an odd sense of deja vu as they file in behind her. It's reminiscent of the first time I saw her, leading the charge into Gruzug's cavern. Zeke, Sylvie, and Thanis are there, as well as a bunch of other players I haven't officially met yet. Well, in the flesh, so to speak. I've seen them communicating on the guild chat while I've been leveling. There are the three dwarf dudes on the warrior team named Stan, Vic, and Rollo, and they're apparently all friends in real life, too. Collectively, they're known to the guild as Team SVR. The exact definition of the acronym can change depending on the day and whether they screw up or not. There's the thief, Jax, who helped me find the thief quest. He's a human dude with a goatee that kind of reminds me of Robin Hood. There are two other elemental mages that look nearly identical to Thanis. One is named Thorin, and the other is a female named Jess, but she still looks like a little old dude to me. And finally, there are the two celestial mages that back up Sylvie. One is a female dwarf named Molly, and the other is a really tall male elf named Rick Jr., whom everyone just calls JR. They pile in with shouts of congratulations, and I'm a bit overwhelmed by it all. Val Helena comes to stand next to me and slaps me hard on the back. So there you have it, folks. Level 12 ninja in less than 3 days. I think this guy's got what it takes. That stirs up more hoots and hollers. Let's see it, Reese, Sylvie says. Come on. Yeah, Zeke shouts. Stop stalling, man. Use the scroll. I laugh. Okay, but first, I just want to say thanks to all you guys. Val told me what you did to get me over to Bangor, so really, thank you for making this happen. And to Val, I turned to look up at her. None of this would have been possible without you, for a lot of reasons. So, from the bottom of my heart, thanks. She nudges me. Okay, let's not get too sappy. Come on, read the scroll. All right, I say, smiling. But before I do, there's one more person I'd like to thank. Someone who's had my back from the very beginning, and still does. So last, but certainly not least, I want to say thanks to you, Gil. My words trail off as I fail to find her in the crowd. My heart sinks. Did she leave? My face flushes red with embarrassment as the whole guild goes silent, staring at me. I'm at a loss for words and don't know what to do. I try to send her a quick PM. Me. Gilly? That player is no longer online. I think I saw her disconnect, Val Helena says to cover for me. Must be from all the lag in here. Yeah, I say. Must be. But still, to Gilly, Val Helena shouts, raising her fist in cheer. To Gilly, they all shout together. I echo them half-heartedly. Then I pull out the scroll, read it, and it disappears in my hands. You use a scroll of shadow copy. You have learned the spell, shadow copy. They all cheer again, and I put on a smile. I even cast the spell so they can see it. But amidst all the cheers and fanfare, I'm left feeling totally empty inside. As the new buff appears on my HUD, I suddenly wish that I could become the shadow I've cast. The guild invites me to continue the celebration at the Salt Wash Inn in Swifttide, but I decline. I'm in no mood for merriment. I put on a good front, though, and tell them I'm tired from leveling, that I need to log off for the day. As the rest of the guild filters out, Val Helena hangs back a little. "Sorry," she says. "Maybe I shouldn't have invited everyone. Did it scare her off, you think?" I shrug. "Maybe. I don't know. She's logged out for now. I'll probably send her a PM later." Suddenly, I feel two huge arms wrap around me as Val Helena kneels and pulls me into an embrace. I'm lost in her warmth for a moment, but then she pulls away and holds my shoulders at arm's length. "Sorry, kid." "What was that for?" I ask, bewildered. She shrugs, then rises to her feet. "Just looked like you needed one." "Thanks," I say. I almost wish it didn't end so quickly. "Try not to let this get you down, Reese. Remember to keep the end goal in mind. You're doing good. Don't let this break your stride, okay?"
"Okay."
She leaves then, and I'm left feeling more confused and conflicted than ever. I contemplate going back to mindlessly murdering dock workers to take my mind off things, but then I get a message alert, and my heart lightens with anticipation and anxiety both. It's gotta be from Gilly. I open it, but it's not from her. It's from the last person I'd expect in the world. From Mike. "Yo, we need to talk. Like, right now. Log off." Chapter 20. Mike. I log out of Crystal Shards and send Gilly a quick message. To Gilly. "Hey, I saw you left. I'm sorry if Val Helena and everyone else upset you. I really didn't mean for that to happen. I hope we can talk about this later. Please PM me. I had to log. My brother wants to talk to me for some reason. Hugs. Reese." I send it and then check to see if she's online again. She isn't, of course. Before I log out of the system completely, my thoughts turn to my brother. What the heck could he want? He never sends me messages online. If he wants to talk to me, he usually just yanks me out of my rig. In that sense, I suppose this is a bit of an improvement. As I take off my rig, I see Mike in my room, standing there right in front of me. He's got his usual get-up on, baggy blue jeans, a black leather biker's jacket, and a white t-shirt. His shaved head and cornrows complete the look, making him the ultimate punk thug poster boy. "What do you want?" I say. I try to suppress the disdain in my voice, but I'm not sure if I actually succeed. His face is unreadable, so I'm not sure if I do or not. "Mom told me you got a job." This is what he wanted to talk about? I hope he doesn't interrogate me. Better to play nice and stroke his ego to throw him off the trail. "Yeah," I say. "I thought about what you said, and you were right. I was wasting my time in the mines. Thanks for helping me to see the real deal." My statement must take him by surprise. He looks stunned for a moment. "Yeah, well, good then. Nice to see you're finally growing up." His words hit me like a kick to the stomach. It takes all my wherewithal not to scowl back at him. "Uh-huh. Was that it, man?" Mike lets out a huff and glances over his shoulder toward the living room. "No, there's something else. It's Mom." My heart and stomach switch places for a second. "Why? What's wrong with Mom? Did something happen?" "No, no," he says quickly, much to my relief. "She's okay. I just gave her some meds and put her to bed. But I'm going to need you to help her not worry about me so much." I raise an eyebrow at that one. "And how am I supposed to do that?" "When I'm out, just tell her that I called you and that I'm okay."
"But you don't call, man!"
I suddenly flare up.
"I don't know where you go or what you do. And you can't know, okay?"
he fires back. His ferocity frightens me.
"Neither can Mom. Understand?"
Mike stares at me intently, with his piercing ice blue eyes, the same as mine, as Mom. Somehow his always seem way more intense, especially now. He breathes heavy through his nose for a couple seconds, and then finally eases back some.
"Look, man, just do it, okay? It's not for me.
It's for Mom. Any added stress is just going to worsen her condition. I swallow the hard lump in my throat and manage a nod.
Okay, I'll do it.
Good, he says. I gotta head out in a few. When Mom wakes up in the morning, just tell her that I left early. I nod again.
Okay.
I'm going to grab a shower, Mike says, and then leaves my room. As I hear him start to kick off his boots, I think back to the plan I had earlier, about following him to see exactly what it is Mike does out there all night. I wonder if I have enough time to pull it off, to print a new coat so he won't recognize me. Butterflies fill my stomach as the thought steeps. If I was ever going to do it, then now, while Mom's passed out on her meds, is the best time. And with Mike's randomness, an opportunity like this might not come along again for a very long time. I've got to go for it. My heart races with adrenaline as I jack back into my rig and hit up one of the clothing retailers. My mind stumbles and races as I flip through the options. I almost wish this was like Crystal Shards, where you could search by item attribute and just pull up a huge list of plus hide and sneak items. I almost pick a long black trench coat, but no. That'll look too conspicuous. Who the heck even wears those things? It's not like it rains down here at all. I settle on a dark pullover sweat top with a hoodie instead, and a net interface visor to cover my eyes. The total is 1,112 credits, and I spend an extra 10% to fast print it with 7-minute delivery. When I log out, I hear the shower running. I slip into a pair of black jeans and manage to get my boots on before I hear the shower stop. Oh, crap. He can't see the hoodie printing. I grab Mud and Jeff and dash past the shower. I hear him come out of it just as I reach the nanoprocessor in the kitchen. Inside the box that resembles a pre-war microwave, I can see the hoodie printing, slowly materializing in a neatly folded pile. The timer reads 4:37 when Mike lumbers out of the shower and toward his room to dress. Come on, come on. I hear Mike fumbling around in his room, and my heart nearly stops when I hear the zip of his leather jacket. The time on the processor still reads 1:34. There's no way I can grab this thing and head back to my room now. Panic sets in as my mind races to figure out what to do. I hear Mike start toward the kitchen, so I turn and press my back against the front of the nanoprocessor, covering what's inside. When he enters, I force myself to give him a nonchalant nod and pray that it looks natural. Heading out? Thankfully, he doesn't even look at me.
Yeah.
Then suddenly he does. He raises a brow.
The heck you doing?
I'm just... My heart thunders in my chest, and I jerk my thumb behind me toward the processor.
Making a snack.
He stares at me a moment more, and then shrugs. Just remember what I said.
Got it.
He leaves and closes the habitat door behind him, right as the buzzer for the processor goes off. I grab the pullover and visor from it and toss Mud and Jeff to the side. I take a half second to throw on the pullover and then wait a minute more to make sure Mike's far enough down the tunnel. Then slowly, I open the hatch and follow him outside. Chapter 21. Secrets. Mike is moving faster than I expected. I actually have to break into a jog to catch up to him as I enter the main tunnel. It's late, and the place is deserted as usual. My legs respond surprisingly well. It almost feels the same as when I'm in-game. I put on the tech visor, which has a solid front, and scroll through the options to activate the front camera. This makes them basically transparent to me, giving me an unobstructed view while concealing my eyes to everyone else. I wait a bit when I see Mike enter the lift station, and then slip in myself just as the elevator doors begin to close. My heart is in my throat as I catch a quick glimpse of Mike. He's seated near the front of the car. I do my best to sit as far away from him as possible. I plop down a few rows back, and I don't think he's taken much notice of me. If he has, he doesn't seem to care, which is good. The ride down seems to take ages, and I pray we don't have another load shed. We arrive at the hub, and I ready myself. Mike gets up as the doors open. I do the same, but I don't rush forward. I let him take the lead as he gets mobbed by the vagabonds waiting outside. I cut across behind him to steer clear and get a better vantage of where he's headed. I shove my hands in my pockets and start to trail him when he finally gets free of the mob. I feel more secure with the added people about. I'll be able to blend in more easily. I'm careful to hang back a good distance, but not so far back that I lose sight of him. Lucky for me, Mike's a big guy and he has a distinctive walk. More like a swagger, really. We travel down the same crowded streets I'm familiar with and head toward the clinic. I refuse offers of both drugs and prostitution with a quick shake of my head. We pass the clinic, and the crowd starts to lighten up. I feel vulnerable again with less people. The glowing holograms and neon signs lessen as well, and the air becomes still and quiet. I fall back a bit more to compensate. Mike is used to these streets, and by his personality, I'm sure that if he thought he was being followed, he'd stop and confront the person right on the spot. Ahead, I see him duck into one of the skyscraper-like buildings that tower into the dark sky. Funny how my brain still thinks of it as sky, even though I know we're miles underground. I hurry a bit so as not to lose him in the building. I get to where he ducked into and see that it's an opening where a large garage door once stood. Inside, I can see garbage and other junk amidst grated platforms and stairways that seem to encompass big pieces of equipment. From my history lessons, I recognize it as a factory of some kind, or maybe a power plant. Before the builders, places as big as this were needed to make things. Things that a kitchen nanoprocessor could now produce in minutes. I catch a glimpse of Mike as he descends down a set of grated steps. I hurry, but move as if I have sneak on, lightening my steps by walking on the balls of my feet. I'm sweating, something that doesn't happen in-game, and my heart is racing too. I change a setting on my visor to increase the lighting. There's only a few dull LED circuits placed here and there. Down the steps, I come to a walkway that's elevated a couple stories above a floor far below. I pause when I see Mike doubling back in my direction, heading toward me, but one level down. The grating is pretty much see-through, and if he happens to look up, I'm done for. I make like I'm using hide and crouch down, blending into some pipework that's fixed to the wall beside me. Mike passes right under me, and I strain to see where he's headed next. He descends another flight of steps to the floor below, and I hear voices. Mike's speaking to someone. I lean over the railing for a better look, but I can't get a good vantage point. I see some pipework that extends over the area he's in, and wonder if I can risk walking on top of it. Three pipes run parallel to one another, about half a foot in diameter each. They look sturdy enough to hold my weight and make a sort of bridge. If I can move across them, I'll be out of sight, yet close enough to see and hear what Mike's doing. I take a deep breath and go for it, climbing over the railing and onto the pipes. I've never done anything like this in my life, yet somehow it comes easy to me. Maybe my body's making up for all the years of lost playtime on the monkey bars. I move like a sloth along the pipework, carefully placing each foot in front of the other to stop the pipes from shaking. I get above where Mike is and see that he is indeed not alone. With him are two other people. I crouch down on the pipes to steady myself and get a better look. The three of them all stand around something that looks exactly like one of the automed booths in the clinic, except this one is completely horizontal and has a person in it. The glass is foggy, so I can't really tell if it's a man or a woman, but they look unconscious.
"Do we know who it is?"
Mike asks one of the two men present. An older man, wearing a beard and a gray boiler suit, answers him.
"Don't know the name yet, but he came from L32G.
"Alive or dead, Bruce?" the third man asks. He's a slim guy with curly red hair and a suit and tie. Not exactly the type I was guessing my brother would be hanging out with. What's he doing with people like this?
"Alive, for now," the bearded man, Bruce, says. "He's the only one we've found so far. Don't know how many more might have chosen to go to the surface with him. We'll know if we see more bodies show up tomorrow."
Bodies? My skin prickles. What's going on here?
"What difference is one person going to make?" my brother says harshly. "We need to get out there. Now. All of us. That's not going to happen," the red-haired man says. "Yeah, and you know why, Dennis," Mike says as if challenging him. "People would rather keep playing their stupid games than face reality.
It's no wonder no one's willing to take the risk anymore.
You have any idea what this place would turn into without crystal shards? Dennis says. They tried it once. It didn't work out so well. Don't believe me? I'll send you a history lesson they don't teach on the education feeds.
What are these guys talking about?
Dennis is right, Mike, Bruce says. Like it or not, it's the best way we've got to maintain stability. We can't risk everyone going out there. They tried that once, too. It was a complete disaster. It's best the majority of people just don't know.
Don't know about what?
So instead you risk people like me, Mike says smugly. Is that it?
Dennis eyes him, something I don't expect a skinny guy like him to get away with when it comes to my brother, which tells me he must be holding something over Mike.
Money, or power, maybe. You trained for it, he says. You have the skills for it. That's why you take the risk.
Yeah, but I didn't sign up for it, Mike says bitterly.
Didn't you now?
Dennis places his hands in his pockets, casual and smug.
You had a choice, and you took it. 4 times, I might add.
Yeah, and you remember that, too, Mike spits back. How many other people you got who've been to the surface 4 times and survived?
Holy crap. My brother has been to the surface? 4 times? And what does he mean by survived? Was he exposed to radiation? The same as that guy in the booth, maybe? The same as my mom?
All we're asking is for you to go out there 1 more time, Mike. We need someone with experience up there. The stakes are just too high now.
Mike folds his arms across his chest. I didn't have any experience my first time out.
Dennis sighs.
Look, we know your mother is sick. If you do this...
Hey, you leave my mom out of this.
We can make it happen for you, Bruce says.
Oh yeah? Like you promised the last time?
You didn't come back with anything last time, Dennis shouts.
Neither did anyone else. You know what the ration is down to now? 700K.
Mike pauses for a moment, as if dumbfounded, and then lets out a caustic laugh.
700K? That's it? What are you doing with the people who hit the limit?
Dennis looks down at the guy in the booth.
Stasis, like him.
Most of them are happy to spend what they have in the shards anyway. In truth, that's the only thing keeping us afloat right now. But we'll all end up in there soon enough if things don't change.
I've got no idea what these guys are even talking about, but my stomach is doing flip-flops.
Don't worry, Bruce says. If you go this time, whether you come back empty-handed or not, we'll make sure you can save your mother.
Save Mom? How? What is Mike going to do?
That's if I even make it back, Mike says.
And the thought that he might not causes my heart to jump.
You know what you need to do then, Dennis says.
Hey, I ain't got to do crap.
But you will, Bruce says. Because we both know how much your mother means to you. Plus, you've got more reasons to go to the surface than just her.
What does he mean by that?
Mike's biting his lip. He looks like he wants to punch the both of them. I kind of want to, too.
Whoever these guys are, they're forcing my brother to go to the surface for them, holding my mother over his head like she's some kind of prize.
Fine, Mike says. I'll do it. But this is the last time. And you'd better come through with that treatment.
There's something else, Dennis says. The main reason we called you here tonight. No one else can know what I'm about to tell you.
My breath catches at that, and a layer of sweat coats my skin.
What? Mike says.
We've detected some abnormal vibration recently, Dennis says. And it's getting stronger.
What does that mean?
We think it could be a builder.
Mike's face goes deadpan.
A builder? Here? We think so, Bruce says. Have they found us? We're not sure. But the last builder nearly wiped us out 300 years ago. And we were in much better shape back then.
300 years ago? Wiped us out? What the heck is going on here?
On the plus side, if you want nanoshards, there's no better source.
Mike looks furious.
You want me to go up against a damn builder? Those things running around up there are bad enough. But a builder?
Things. What's he talking about?
That's why we need you, Bruce says. And whoever else you can convince to go up with you.
If you'd let me do it my way, I'd take the whole damn city with me. We'll all die down here thanks to you two, asleep and playing these damn games.
You know that's impossible, Dennis says. We don't have the nanotech left to gamble. Whoever goes to the surface has got to be fit to the task.
Speaking of, how's your team coming along?
Mike shrugs. What's it matter? I can't force them to come. You know that.
The reason I ask is because we're moving the timetable up, Dennis says. With the potential of a builder finding us, we've got to act now.
How soon? Mike asks.
We're moving it up by 3 weeks.
What? Mike shouts. That's less than a week away.
A week? In less than a week, my brother's going to the surface? To take on a builder? I don't even know what that means.
I'm sorry, Bruce says. But these are dire.
His words cut short as my foot slips on the pipework. It sends a flake of rust falling to the floor. Oh, crap.
Hey!
One of them shouts. I bolt back the way I came, trading stealth for speed. I hear Mike shout from below as I bounce along the pipework.
Someone's up there!
I hop over the railing onto the catwalk and take off at top speed. I can hear heavy footfalls running up the stairs a level below me. I have a good head start, but I'm bound to be spotted if I hit the open street. I clamber up another set of stairways instead, close to the exit, and then crawl onto a piece of large machinery and make myself small in its shadow. About a minute later, Mike appears, followed by the two others. They're all breathing heavy, though Mike not so much. They look outside to the street, and then return to the building again.
Who do you think it was? Bruce asks.
Looked small to me, Mike says.
Could have just been a kid.
Probably a street rat, Dennis says distastefully.
If they're living way out here, they probably don't even have shard access.
Not much risk of a leak, then, Bruce asks.
Not where it matters, Dennis says. Still, I'll put a trace out. If anything we've mentioned pops up on the shards, I'll let you know who it is.
My throat goes dry. They disperse then, and I'm left hiding alone in the dark, trembling with fright. Chapter 22. Aftermath. I wait for more than an hour, making sure they're gone and that none of them return to look for me. My mind is awash with what I've overheard. Builders? The surface? It's almost too much to take in. The only thing I know for sure is that my brother is going to risk his life facing both, and all to save my mom. That's almost as hard to believe as everything else. My brother, the king jerk and reclusive loner, has been risking his life on the surface, doing who knows what, to save our mother? I suddenly feel like the stupid little kid he thinks I am. Here I am, thinking he's abandoned his family, while in reality, he's risking everything for it. It makes my own efforts to save our mom seem almost trivial. But darn it, maybe if I had told him the truth about the scroll and my plan, maybe if I had come clean, he wouldn't have gone and made that crazy deal to put his life at risk. In less than a week, he'll be going to the surface again. To face a builder? I still don't understand that part. This builder, or whatever it really is, doesn't sound anything like what I learned about in my education feeds. What did that guy mean by one nearly wiping us out 300 years ago? I thought builders built this place. Why would one want to destroy it? It can't be the same thing. I need to talk to someone about this. But who? From what that guy said, no one should even know what I know. And if I mention it while connected to the shards, he'll be able to trace it back to me? I feel so alone and scared. I thought this would be about saving my mom, but now it's about saving my brother, too, a guy I normally hate. Still, the thought of actually losing him tears my guts apart. I can't let Mike go through with this. I can't let him work for those guys and do whatever it is he's supposed to do up there on the surface. He has to know there's another way to save our mom. A better way. Would he even believe me if I told him, though? Especially now? after I've lied to both of them? No, not likely. I can't talk to him about this. I just need to make it happen. That's the only way he'll believe me. When he sees Mom is cured, he can go tell those two guys to buzz off and deal with that builder themselves, whatever the heck it is. My plan hasn't changed. It's just accelerated now. Val Helena even hinted it was possible. She said I could end up earning enough for Mom's operation sooner than I thought. That I could earn millions, just like Iko. But could I earn 3.5 million credits in less than a week? I have to, I say to myself. If I'm going to save both Mike and Mom, I need to get back to Crystal Shards immediately. I need to level like I've never leveled before. Chapter 23. Insomnia. I sneak back through the hub to take the elevator back home. It's a daunting trek, and I spend half the time looking over my shoulder, expecting to see Mike charging at me at any moment. I know it probably wouldn't make any kind of sense for that to happen, though. They didn't get a good look at me, thank goodness, and my disguise is still holding up pretty well. I look no different than most of the people roaming the streets down here. I'm relieved when I get back to the hab without incident, and doubly so to see Mom still sleeping soundly on the couch and Mike nowhere in sight. I'm dead tired from the mental exhaustion and adrenaline, as well as the couple-mile hike through the hub. Hitting the sack would feel great right about now, but the imperative of my new goal means I can give myself no quarter. Literally every hour counts right now. If I want to make 3.5 million credits, I need to be level 85 yesterday, and soloing Gruzug by tomorrow. I order a couple of energy drinks and down one before jacking into my rig. I'm slightly disappointed when I don't see a response from Gilly. Although, given the present circumstances, a tiff with my online girlfriend hardly seems worthy of my concerns. Still, I can't just push her totally to the side. Not again. I made that mistake once already. I look into setting up a live stream. If I'm going to make money, I need to exploit every opportunity available. It takes me all of 5 minutes. I call my channel Dodge Tank and have all of 0 subscribers and no idea how to get more. Finally, I log into Nazgar. I materialize in the warehouse and get to work. I hit and run the dock workers in chain succession. It's a mind-numbing experience after a while and not fun at all, but I'm not playing for fun anymore. I'm playing for my brother's life. After an hour, I hit level 20 and get a new ability called Charge Strike. Charge Strike. Use your extreme agility to close the gap on your enemies with a lightning-quick attack. Activation, instantaneous. Cooldown, 5 seconds. Cost, 10 TP. Seems I get abilities every 10 levels instead of 5 on an advanced class. This looks like a pretty good one, though. I test it out on a dock worker that's standing a good 30 feet away. My heart pumps with adrenaline as I literally fly toward him in less than a second, jabbing him with my katana. I go toe-to-toe with him for a bit, but I'm able to evade the dock worker's attacks without too much difficulty. I then try the active dodge ability I got at level 10. My body shifts almost on its own in a blur, avoiding a punch that was dead set on hitting me a split second before. I cast Shadow Copy and continue to fight head-on. My damage is low, since I'm still using noob weapons, and without the backstab, the fight is prolonged. I lose my shadow to a punch and screw up on an evade, taking a hit that drops me to 10%. I go to use Shadow Copy again, but it's still on cooldown. So is active dodge. I retreat, barely dodging another swing, and run to hide behind some crates. My heart is still pumping from the close calls when the dock worker draws near and then gives up his search for me. I can really feel what it means to dodge tank now, operating so close to the edge. One hit from defeat no matter what you fight. In truth, I love the feeling of it. I continue on for another 2 hours to hit level 30, dumping my points into dex to catch up with my 50 agility. The new ability I get at that level is called Retreat. Retreat. Perform a backflip that instantly takes you out of melee range. Activation, instantaneous. Cooldown, 5 seconds. Cost, 10 TP. I remember the Ninja Frogmaster guy using this on me, moving quickly out of range so he could cast his spells. I try it out, and it's pretty effective. It allows me to escape after a backstab much faster than simply running. I'm even able to chain it with charge strike and perform wicked hit-and-run combos. It feels like a dream, like I'm someone else. Like I'm a real honest-to-goodness superhero ninja with badass moves that can take down any foe. At least in virtual form. Despite my fatigue, I feel invigorated and continue on well past level 30. I don't actually remember when I stop, because I think I fall asleep at some point. When I come to again, I notice I'm at level 34. And it's almost 4 a.m. Up way too late. I log out and remove the rig to get a couple hours of real sleep before my mom wakes up. Level 34. Not bad. If I can keep up this pace, maybe I can do it. Maybe I can reach level 85 before Mike has to risk his life. I slide onto my mattress and am asleep before I know it. I wake up with a groan. The payback for staying up late and running on nothing but energy drinks all night is brutal. I'm barely able to operate as I hear my mom calling me from the living room. I feel irritable from lack of sleep, and my body aches all over. Part of me wonders if I wasn't backflipping for real last night. Then I remember the conversation I witnessed with my brother. That causes me to sober a bit. I drag myself out of bed for a shower and almost stand. Suddenly, I remember that I left Mutt and Jeff leaning next to the hatchway door in the kitchen. Oh, crap. Mom is already awake. I can't just walk out there to get them now. I sigh inwardly. I feel terrible for what I'm about to do, but there really isn't any other way. Hey, Mom! I call out to her. Can you check to see if Mike put Mutt and Jeff somewhere? They're not in here with me, and I need to get up. Jeez, this feels bad. All right, honey, she replies weakly. I endure my remorse as I hear her strain to get up off the couch. She's weaker than I am, and I'm forcing her to get up because of my stupid carelessness and lies. I need to not slip up like this ever again. She comes in with my crutches, looking paler than ever. Here you go, sweetie. Thanks, Mom. She coughs a bit as she turns to leave. I'll get breakfast in a sec, I say. It's all right, I'm up. I'll get us something. She then cocks her head and looks at me funny. You don't look so good, Ryan. Are you sick? No, just long hours with the new job, I guess. She frowns. Well, try not to push yourself too hard. I won't, I lie. Way too late for that. I know you worry about me, Ryan, but I don't want you to put your life on hold or stress out because of me. I'll be fine. You need to focus on yourself, too, on what you want to achieve in life. Have you even given any thought to that? You're 17, you know. I don't like where this is going. Sounds like parting advice from someone who thinks she's about to die. I want to tell her she's the one who doesn't need to worry, that I'm going to make sure she's okay. I'm going to make sure everyone is okay. I've got some plans I'm working on. She doesn't look convinced. I give her a smile, and she finally leaves. After breakfast, I log back in. I'm shocked to see that I have 13 new subscribers on my streaming page. How the heck did they even find out about me? I also see a couple messages they left on my board. Riley. Man, you are a leveling machine! I'm going to tell all my friends about you, dude. GG. Everton the First. Cool moves! Selly. Definitely no Ico, but not bad. The messages are unexpected and motivating all at once. Except for the last one, maybe. I'm sure 13 subscribers isn't going to net me much, but it's a start. I check for messages from Gilly next. None. But I do see a ton of hate mail from Ico's followers that I send straight to the junk bin. I check for Gilly herself and see that she's online. I send her a message and am happy when it goes through. Me. Hey, can we talk? There's a long delay before I get a reply. Gilly. I don't want to talk. I'm embarrassed by the whole thing. Her response is much better than I'd hoped it would be. At least she's not totally ticked off still. I check where she is in-game and fast travel to see her in person. I materialize in Swifttide and find her hanging out in the Smith's Guild, which is a close cousin to Miner. She's wearing a thick leather apron and is working over an anvil. I can't tell what she's crafting, but she's slamming a piece of red-hot metal with a hammer. Her green eyes dance with the light of the sparks that go shooting off with each bang.
"I know what you're going to say," Gilly says, still working. "And you're right. What I did really sucked. I'm sorry."
Bang. Bang. "Gilly, I feel like moving closer to give her a hug, but the flying sparks keep me at bay.
You don't have to apologize."
She finally stops hammering.
"Yes, I do. It was your big moment, and I got stupid and messed it all up for you."
I open my mouth to say that she didn't, but my raw feelings from that night get the better of me.
"It's fine, really. So much has happened since then. Honestly, I barely remember it.
Besides, I know how you feel about Val Helena."
"It's not just her," Gilly says. "It was everyone else, too."
I see what look like tears forming in her eyes.
"You okay?"
She shakes her head.
"I'm an only child, remember? I'm not used to sharing things."
And then she pauses to look me in the eye.
"Especially my only friend."
Her words make my heart skip and melt all at the same time.
"I know it sounds stupid, but when they all came rushing in there, I felt replaced. Like you'd moved on. Like you had better friends and didn't need me anymore."
"Gilly, no one could ever replace you." She sulks.
"You sure about that? Not even Val Helena?"
"Val?" I laugh.
"She's not like that to me. She's like my friend's hot mom."
I laugh again. I was going to say mentor. She shrugs.
"Anyway, I'm sorry."
"Hey," I say, and tug her toward me by the crook of her elbow. "It's in the past. Water under the bridge." She relents and lets me give her a hug, but then she stiffens in my arms.
34?
"Huh?" She steps back and gives me a shocked, almost hurt look.
"When did you hit 34?
"Oh, yeah, a lot happened last night." She folds her arms, looking deflated again.
"So I guess you don't want me to go adventuring with you anymore either."
"What?"
"We need to be within 3 levels of each other to share XP.
"Gilly."
"Never mind. It's okay," she says, looking down at the ground. "I was only doing it for you anyway. I'm just happy I was able to help you get this far. If you want to move ahead, I understand."
"It's not that I want to, Gilly. I have to now."
"Right. Your mom. I get it."
"No, not just for my mom. Something's changed. I need to be able to afford the operation in just a couple of days now."
"What?"
Her mouth drops open, and her brow creases with concern.
"Oh no, Reese. Did your mom get sick?"
"No, no. It's not her. It's my brother."
"What?"
"It's hard to explain, and I can't really do it here." This has her brow furrowing even more. I want to tell her so bad about what I overheard that night, about the surface and my brother and the builder, and I would if we weren't on the net. Maybe there's another possibility. "Were you serious about wanting to meet in real life someday?" She swallows.
"Well, sure, I guess. Were you?"
"How about today?" She goes dead still for a second, like maybe she's just fallen out of her rig or something. Finally, she reanimates.
Today?
"Yeah, I have a lot of stuff I want to share with you, Gilly, and it'd probably be better in person."
"You really want to see me?"
I nod. "If you still want me to." She pauses a moment more, but there's a smile on her face now.
"Let me go ask my mom,"
she says, and then her eyes go unfocused. I've got butterflies the size of eagles soaring through my stomach now. I just asked Gilly to meet in real life. Sure, it was for serious reasons, but still, this will be the first time I've ever met anyone like this before. Just the thought of seeing her has me worried about what she might think of me.
"Do you want to come for dinner at 6?
She says, returning. I swallow back the lump in my throat.
Okay.
She laughs nervously.
Wow. Okay.
So, where do you live?
Oh,
she says.
L322A, number 12.
322? Wow, that's like really far down. I never gave thought to what kind of economic status Gilly was in, but living that far down, her family must be pretty well off. She just shrugs.
My name is Jill, by the way. When we meet. It's my real name. It's Jill.
Ryan, I say. I feel like our relationship has just taken a major step forward into reality. You can still call me Reese if you want to, though. I respond to either. She laughs at that.
Ditto.
I like Jill. It's pretty. She blushes a bit.
Thanks.
Do you still want to come help me level? You might not get XP, but I could always use a nice heal, or maybe even a raise now and then.
Today? Oh, no. I gotta go do stuff.
Huh?
Yeah,
she says.
Like stuff to prepare for when you come over. And stuff.
I laugh.
Okay.
She grins like a little kid before jump-tackling me with a hug and kiss.
I can't wait till tonight. See you at 6.
Gilly then promptly logs off, leaving me there to scratch my head. 6 o'clock is like 10 hours away. What on earth could she be doing that would take her 10 hours to prepare for? Buying something to wear, possibly? Maybe I should consider doing the same. I've never been on a date before, so I don't really know. Times like this, I wish Mike and I were on normal speaking terms. He's had plenty of girlfriends, and not the online kind. Still, even with something as important as this, I can't afford to waste the time. I've got 10 hours of uninterrupted playtime ahead of me, and I need to max the heck out of it. Chapter 24. Solo. I might not have time to gear myself up in the real world, but on Crystal Shards, it's now embarrassingly imperative that I do so. I've gained 34 levels by backstabbing with a level 1 weapon. There's no way I'm spending another 50 levels doing that. If I never see another dock worker again, it will be too soon. And unfortunately, while high in XP, dock workers are, unsurprisingly, quite poor. I pool the total drops I've received from killing them all night and have what barely amounts to 5K credits. I check my balance after my thief gear has sold.
You have 29,175 credits.
Leveling is going to have to come at the cost of making money, because to upgrade even just my katanas is going to set me back 7K apiece. There's a whole bunch of other gear I could use as well, but I can't afford the credit hit. A ninja teko glove with +5 dexterity and a scarf that has +2 evasion catch my eye. I buy the scarf because it's only 2K and looks really cool. At 10K, the gloves will have to wait. I finish with a level 30 black silk gi that gives me crap defense but has +4 points to dodge. Suited up, I actually start to resemble a ninja, though a very broke one. Literally so, since I'm now down to 10K after my shopping spree. My resolve wavers a little as I wonder how I'm ever going to turn that into 3.5 million. Level, I tell myself. Get out there and kill stuff. I have no idea where I should be going to next. I'm about to shoot a question to the guild chat when I remember something. That message Val Helena sent me. I check my messages and find the one she sent on my first day as a level 1 warrior. She said she had prepared me a guide of sorts. I open it up and see it's roughly just that. Level 1 to 10, Westwood. Level 11 to 20, Murky Swamp. Level 21 to 30, Goatoa Plains. Level 31 to 40, Ugatha Jungle. Level 41 to 50, Andor Steppe. Level 51 to 60, Bosio Glacier. Level 61 to 85, Mao Desert. I guess it's to the jungle I go, wherever that is. I spend a few minutes studying the in-game map, and then pick my closest spawning point to the jungle and head out. It takes me around 20 minutes of traveling from the edge of the murky swamps, where Gilly and I had our first date, and through the rolling plains of Goatoa. I see a lot of other players there, partying in groups of five or six to take on the large white hippogriffs that roam the plains. I'm tempted to give one a try myself, but they're only level 20. I can't be wasting my time on stuff like that. I travel on. Soon it begins to get hotter, the grass taller, until finally the terrain shifts into the steamy jungle of Yugatha. The trees here are humongous, wide, like buildings. Their branches tower over 100 feet high and spread out in an umbrella-like canopy that produces enough shade to produce an eerie twilight beneath. Thick vines and leafy plants fill the spaces between the massive trees, giving rise to a pungent aroma of decay from the rotting undergrowth they leave behind. I work my way through the dense foliage, following a narrow pathway. I pause when I feel the presence of something else in the jungle with me. I take a second to cast Shadow Copy. I take a few steps more and something big and black comes charging at me from the side. I blow active dodge and my body becomes a blur as the claws of something pass right through me. Your awareness increases by 0.4. Skill up. Your awareness is now 32. Your dodge increases by 0.7. I then recognize what nearly hit me, the huge paw of a giant panther, and it's clawing back at me for a second strike. I use retreat and flip backward into the jungle. The wildcat, as big as a horse, pounces after me. Crap! I find my footing among the mass of tree roots on the forest floor and leap to the side to avoid the panther as it snarls and claws wildly at me. I've never fought anything so quick before. I force myself to get in the zone, to study its movements and anticipate its attacks. I lose my shadow trying to gauge the rhythm of its bites and swipes, but get a real evasion when I finally predict it's about to strike my head and successfully duck beneath it. Your evasion increases by 0.3. Skill up. Your evasion is now 52. I calm down a little with the success. The big cat doesn't seem so scary anymore. I jab into its thick black fur with my kunai blades and take off an amazing 10% with each hit. I then get a double attack and land 4 blows in a flurry. The panther whines and winces with each hit, and I roll out of the way of its pounce when it retaliates. I use charge strike, closing the gap again, and give it another blender-like hail of slashes from my blades. I get a satisfying round of critical hits, doing double damage, and the panther expires. You defeated the jungle panther. You gain 12,000 experience points. You find a panther fang. You find a panther fang. My heart is still pounding with adrenaline, and it feels like I finally had a decent fight. I check to see how much these fangs are worth. They go for about 1K each on the auction board. Not bad, I suppose. Not huge money, but the XP is okay. I trek further into the jungle and discover another panther. This time I use sneak to move undetected and maneuver myself behind it. I open combat with a backstab. The panther roars as I take an instant 25% off its health bar. It whips around to claw my stomach, but I avoid it with a quick hop back. I charge in again and work down its HP with 5 or 6 quick slashes, dodging a snap from its jaws in between. You defeated the jungle panther. You gain 12,000 experience points. Kill chain times 1. You gain 6,000 experience points. You find a panther fang. This one felt like it went down a lot easier than the first, perhaps because I could already anticipate its attack pattern, or perhaps the surprise attack of the first one threw me off guard and gave me a false impression of how hard the beasts truly were. Whatever the case, I recast Shadow Copy and go hunting for more. I keep fighting jungle panthers for about an hour, and after a while, they really don't seem all that hard at all. I blow another hour chain-killing them to reach level 40. Congratulations! You have gained a level. You are now level 40. You have learned the new passive ability, Wall Run. Wall Run. Your advanced training allows you to traverse vertical surfaces while sprinting. Whoa! I have to try this out. I fix on one of the building-sized trees and dash toward it head-on. I leap onto the massive trunk when I get close and keep on sprinting. The world tilts as I charge up the smooth tan bark of the tree and dart from side to side to avoid the branches that extend from its flanks. I get a third of the way up before I feel myself tire. I aim for one of the branches and hop onto it for a rest. When I land, my lungs are burning from both exhaustion and exhilaration. I can see the entire jungle expanse below me, trails weaving through the undergrowth like tiny streams. Birds soar above the treetops, calling to one another with loud caws and whistles. I breathe out a sigh of pure amazement and delight. A sight like this is almost reward alone for hitting level 40 ninja. But I'm still only halfway to the goal. It's been a few hours now, but compared to last night, the pace is slow. The panthers seem easy enough to kill now, but I'm having to kill more and more of them to level each time. Maybe I need to think bigger. After all, I was going toe-to-toe with those dock workers at level 20 with noob gear on. Maybe that was the key. This guide Val Helena gave me works when playing it safe, but if I want to level fast like I did last night, I need to start punching way above my weight class. I need to play like I'm rolling Gambler's Boon. And with Shadow Copy, I think maybe I can do it. The Steppe of Andor is next on the list. I prepared a fast travel there, since I already have the spawn point unlocked, but I won't be staying. My true destination will be the ice fields to its north and the Bosile Glacier beyond. I'm just about to travel when I notice something large moving through the jungle below me. It's a panther, but where the normal ones are as big as a horse, this one is more like an elephant. I focus to see what it is. Sheba, legendary monster. Level? Question mark. The great huntress of the Ugatha patrols her territory without mercy. Beastmen and the races of men fear her alike. It is said that her fangs are sharp enough to pierce the strongest mithril plate, and her roar is so powerful that one may die just from hearing it. Affinity, thunder. Adrenaline spikes my blood as I consider the possibility of trying to fight it. But there's no way. I'm not 85 yet. Then again, this is a lower level area than the mines. Maybe it won't be as tough as Gruzug. I decide to do something I rarely do. I pull up another window and search the net for any information I can find on Sheba. I pull up some guy's page with a whole list of LMs on it. I find his entry for Sheba. Name, Sheba. Approximate level, 45. Type, panther. Normal attacks, claw and bite. Special attacks, savage, hold, plus critical, plus bleeding. Tail swipe, stun for 3 seconds. Thunder roar, massive AoE. Drops, Sheba's fang, used to craft Sheba's dagger, rare, untradeable. Plus 10 dexterity, plus 10 agility, plus 15% backstab damage. Level 45. That's not so bad, is it? Maybe I can do it. That dagger looks pretty darn amazing. I look up the fang on the auction house to see how much it's worth. Sheba's fang. In stock, 0. Last trade, 192,000 credits. My heart hits my throat. Holy cow. This is the kind of big win I've been waiting for. As I close the window and contemplate giving Sheba a go, I notice a group of players trekking through the jungle toward her about 100 feet away. There are at least 2 parties, and they're all in the same guild, most in their high 20s and low 30s. A raiding party. They're definitely going for her. I pull up my stats to consider what kind of chances I got. Name, Reese. Class, ninja. Level, 40. Strength, 6. Dexterity, 60. Agility, 70. Intelligence, 4. Mind, 6. Vitality, 8. HP, 221 of 221. Stamina, 127 of 127. TP, 85 of 85. I've been focusing all my attribute points on dex and agility only. My HP is so low from putting nothing into vitality that one hit from that thing is sure to kill me. My heart sinks at my chances. I'm no Iko, not yet. I can't take that thing on. And if I die, I have no idea where my last home point is even set at. I'd have to find a way back here somehow, and naked. As I watch the guild close to about 30 feet, something snaps inside me. If I don't get there first, I'll never know if I even had a chance. The words I was preaching to myself earlier come flying back at me. I need to start punching above my weight class, and this is a golden opportunity. I cast Shadow Copy and take off in a sprint along the tree branch. I line myself up with a